20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. You know the guy with me today, the one and only Justice Mosqueda. You can find him on acmepackingcompany.com, on social media at JUMOSQ. Justice, my friend, how the heck are you doing?
Good. Woke up after that long snooze after that terrible Super Bowl game. Honestly, Andy, like the Green Day going into it and then the Bad Bunny halftime, like I could have left after the halftime show, dog. That was not a good football game. The AFC stinks. We're in a bad spot in the sport right now.
Green Bay is better than New England, right? Maybe.
On paper, yeah, I think I'm closer to a maybe than anything else. I mean, I like Sam Monson, right? Sam's always been nice to me. But Drake May is a rogue Sam Monson vote away from being this year's MVP quarterback. He didn't play well in the postseason, obviously. It wasn't just the snow in that Denver game. I really do think that shoulder injury kind of messed him up. But, I mean, it doesn't help when – I mean, New England's pass protection is terrible. Everyone loved to give them their flowers. Oh, they turn around the offensive line in a year. No, that's not true. Drake is taking a bunch of sacks. And then he's it's like one third of his sacks are sack fumbles right now. So like, yeah, they have to fix that and they have money.
Big time.
Maybe they're the Rashid Walker team this off season, right? Depending on what they want to do with Campbell moving them in and out. I think the arm length stuff is one of the dumbest narratives out there. I don't think arm length matters that much, pretty much for any position. One arm is always longer than two. Right, like if you're sticking your arms out like this, or if you're sticking your arm out like this, I can get in a NFL tackle's chest if I move my shoulders. I can't do it if I'm straight armed. And most of the stuff that they're doing is not straight arm stuff. He needs to work on his punches and the timing of it. But yeah, that Super Bowl stunk. I looked at because I started looking at some of these metrics after that game, actually, because that's what I do with my spare time when I come home drunk after going to the Super Bowl party. There's never been a time when two divisions in the same conference have been as strong relative to the rest of the league as right now. Like all the good teams in the league right now, but not all of them, but half of the good teams in the league right now are in the NFC North and the NFC West, right? Yep. And then there's the Cardinals. They're the unfortunate pinata.
The red-birded stepchild. The red-birded stepchild.
Yeah, good luck, Mike LaFleur. But yeah, I mean, teams are not playing well in the AFC. I know we brought this up mid-season when it was like week 10 and the NFC had a higher win percentage over the AFC than any previous year combined or any previous year in the past. And that included like the post-merger teams, right? When everyone was like, the AFC is a fraud, it's an illegitimate league, all that stuff. The AFC was doing better head-to-head against the NFC in those times than they were this year. The AFC just desperately needs someone to figure out how to build a team around Burrow, how to build a team. I think Herbert is coming up. I think Herbert is trending up. The May situation is going to trend up. Like those teams have the assets to be able to build around those squads in the coming years. But, you know, having little around Lamar, having little around Burrow, both of Herbert's tackles being out, May being behind a bad offensive line, Denver having a great defense but not having a quarterback, Houston having a great defense and then their quarterback turned into a pumpkin in the postseason. Like, just the AFC was not good this year.
It was not. It really was not. And especially for a league that felt like anything could happen in any week and how parity drove a lot of things, at least it felt like for a good chunk of the season. And like going into the playoffs, it felt like any team could win any game. I went into the Super Bowl feeling like, yeah, of course anything can happen, but it really felt like Seattle was just the clear going into the game. It felt like they were the clear and obvious better team. It felt even more so after the game. I said going into it, I thought Rams Seahawks was the Super Bowl in the NFC Championship game. I don't think New England beats Denver if Bo Nix is healthy in that game, honestly. I don't know if the championship, the Super Bowl would have been better if that was the Broncos instead. I still think the Seahawks are just better. But yeah, it was very clear both before and after that game that Seattle was just better.
Yeah. Pretty boring game. Hate to see the season end like that when we were talking about the chaos all year. And then it's just like a snoozer at the end. It's like, great.
It is. It does feel weird sometimes how you get like a great season and then the Super Bowl is a flop. And other times you get like a kind of mess season and then the Super Bowl is just incredible. Yeah. That just didn't work out that way for it felt like we were due for a Super Bowl like that. I haven't gone back and looked at it. It just feels like we've had so many great Super Bowls over the last couple decades for the most part. Felt like we were kind of due for one of those and we certainly got it. But what if anything, did you learn any key takeaways, anything Green Bay needs to learn, anything, any big things from that game?
Well, I mean, I don't think anything novel to this game. Like, it helps to have defensive tackles. Like, both of these teams have defensive tackles. I think that's kind of the through line between both of those squads. But that was kind of it to me. Like, New England doesn't have good edges. They had one cornerback. Like, Christian Gonzalez did well, but that was kind of it. Their linebackers got exposed. Like, Seattle's running the system that theoretically Gannon is supposed to be running in Green Bay next year, right? So, I mean,
let's that's
one positive. I know they had a bunch of people get asked a bunch of questions because this is like when you're in there with press conferences in Green Bay, right? You get shot at like one question with the DC or something like that, and then it's like the next person.
Yep.
The cool thing about the Super Bowl is like if you guys go to like Doug Farrar's Twitter account, I don't know if he has a Blue Sky or whatever, but I saw it on Twitter. He was asking Leslie Frazier, who's been around the league for forever and is their assistant head coach, and just kind of went through like how coverages and mentality and just like the schemes have changed in the NFL. And he did a really good deep dive and got to ask a couple questions in a row to Leslie Frazier to actually kind of get that stuff out of him. And yeah, I mean, it's just the whole mentality is just if you can stop the run at a too high, like the world is your oyster, right? If you can pass rush while in the run game, you're playing a gap and a half, the world is your oyster, right? Like everything opens up. And hopefully Green Bay can get to that spot. Yet to be seen yet. I do think that we are going to be a quarters team. I know people talk about how Gannon has said in his pressers and stuff in the past, like, oh, I'm very versatile. I call plays to what my players like what their strengths and stuff are. I believe that, and I believe that in the front, and I believe that in terms of like, are we going to sim pressure? Or are we just going to play it straight and stuff like that? The coverages, for the most part, have been consistent. Like that's the part, that's the through line from his time in Philadelphia and Arizona. He plays quarters, so I'm assuming that we're going to play quarters. It's a real tough thing to deal with at the NFL level, and the only way you can really cook it is if you're going against a Pat Mahomes or a Dak Prescott or something like one of these quarterbacks who just do really well in the pocket and can just deliver like a perfect ball if you ask them to. And those guys have to get hot at the same time. So
it's one thing to game plan, you know, week in and week out, or have some 4-3 and some 3-4 stuff if you want. We've even seen Jeff Hafley do a little bit of that with different lines throughout the course of the season. But at some point you have to have a core principle, a guiding light, a system that you want to be able to run. And at some point, I mean, obviously they'll decide that they probably already have, but, and we'll find out about it eventually, but you have to have something that you can lean on as your sort of bread and butter.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and you can do anything. You have so much time in the meetings and stuff throughout the week. You really can do anything in the NFL. With that being said, like the order of operations that you go with when you have a problem, like the toolbox that the tool that you reach in the toolbox for, right? I do think that matters, right? Where we talked about it midseason with the LaFleur stuff. It's like he doesn't like throwing outbreakers. Well, you played a bunch of quarters teams who smothered you in the flats and you couldn't get yak yards after Tucker Kraft left. So you had to go to the outbreakers. I do think one of the first tools that Gannon is going to go into pretty consistently is going to end up being like, hey, we should play quarters and see if they can run the ball on us.
You mentioned obviously being able to, you know, to stop the run when in too high safety. It is interesting of like the two easy buttons right now are, can you pass rush with four, which has been forever, you know, that's a long, you know, long time. There's nothing new, but can you pass rush with four and can you stop the run in too high safety? And if you have those two things that you can do, you are just, I mean, scheme, a lot of the scheme stuff goes out the window. If you can do that, it doesn't matter anywhere near as much, but if you can stay in too high and still stop the run, and if you can get after the quarterback with four and drop seven, that's a pretty good cheat code in the modern NFL.
We've talked about this with all those cover three guys, right? With like Saleh isn't calling anything different in San Francisco this past year. He doesn't have a Bosa, right? He doesn't have what the Legion of Boom had on the line of scrimmage when you had Michael Bennett kicking inside, rushing the passer from there, Bruce Irvin, all those guys, Cliff Averill. Yeah, I mean, that's the key to football. We did it. We solved it. Here's the problem. Every team wants to do that now, right? Like every single team is going to want to rush with four. Every single team is going to want to be able to run the football consistently. Every single team. I don't think that every team is in this market yet. But I do think like eventually like the meta in the NFL is going to be playing two high safeties and fitting the run from there. And again, like those DCs, they view fitting the run differently when you live in that world, when they, those guys who live in that world and are playing the quarter system specifically, they think you get nine in the box, even though you play two high safeties. So they're counting the safeties in the box, right? So like, if you really have that mentality and you can execute it, yeah, man, that thing is hard. That's hard to stop.
And I feel like Green Bay has a little bit of a cheat code there with their safety play, and specifically Evan Williams being able to do that at a high level. I mean, that's, there's some things that this defense still needs, you know, some super glue and some band-aids on, but their safety play and being able to come up and stop the run is definitely something that I feel very confident in.
Yeah, that's not the part that I'm worried about. I'm worried about McDuffie covering drags and what amounts to like man-to-man coverage. I'm worried about who our nose tackle is going to be in 26. I think less worried about the cornerbacks than most Packers fans, because I think most Packers fans have like, if you ask them confidence, like 0 to 10, I think they would be 0. I think I'm like at like a 3.5. So I'm above average. But yeah, those are the things I worry about on defense. It's not those other factors.
I'm glad you brought up corner. That one of my takeaways from Seattle yesterday was corners for a couple different reasons. A, we saw Witherspoon especially just get kind of weaponized and how awesome he was as a rusher, as a blitzer. I do think that there's maybe some meat on the bone to do a little bit more. I'm not saying Javon Bullard is Devon Witherspoon or anything like that, but I do think there is some potential meat on the bone to do maybe a little bit more of that type of stuff with him. And again, utilize Xavier McKinney and Evan Williams, maybe even a little bit more in some of those weaponized situations. The other thing that stood out to me was the outside corners, especially when Witherspoon is in the slot, are Reek Woolen and Josh Jobe. Reek Woolen is up and down. He makes some big plays. He'll give up some stuff. Josh Jobe is a journeyman off the scrap heap corner from Philadelphia. They both have some good, some bad, but the thing that I really about Jobe is that he's not a great cover guy. He's a really good tackler. And obviously Woolen's big enough. He's hit and miss in tackling, but you could tell their secondary, obviously, you know, Iman Wari, their secondary was willing and able to play physical, aggressive football. For the most part, tackling was not an issue for the Packers secondary until it kind of was, especially with Carrington Ballantyne.
Yeah.
That's the one thing. And the more that I've sort of thought about it, especially after the Seahawks game, is just one of my takeaways is I do think I don't have an issue with the safeties. I don't have an issue with Bullard in the slot. And I do think that if one of your corners is Keyshawn, especially the way I know that, and I played it and everyone else played it, the play that he had at the goal line where he looked like he certainly made a bit of a business decision in that Chicago game, which is a ugly, ugly look. But outside of that, he tackled very well throughout the course of the season. If they can just get that other corner position upgraded a little bit, maybe a little bit better coverage, a little bit better tackling than what Carrington can bring, I'm with you, I think, in the fact that I actually think that brings together this defensive backfield pretty damn well.
Yeah, and Seattle, I do think that, like, some of the metrics, too. So, like, all right, I did this thing. I didn't tell you that I did this, but now we've signed up for me kind of reading off numbers. So I looked at NFL Pro. I looked at yards allowed per coverage snap. which is what I think you should be using when you evaluate cornerbacks. I do not care about their passer rating. If a guy gives up 180-yard touchdown for the entire season, his passer rating is going to be crap. If you give up 80 yards and a touchdown for the entire year, you should be getting you're the best cornerback in the league, right? There, yep. There are flaws in just looking at passer rating, right? So I think it really should be yards per coverage snap. I know PFF has done a lot of like year-to-year looks, and it's the most stable number as far as cornerbacks, which, by the way, like cornerbacks, you can look like year-to-year in most metrics, and they're bouncing up and down, right? Like this is the most stable one. It's the one that has the least amount of noise. When I looked at it, there are 89 cornerbacks who played at least as many snaps as Nate Hobbs did at outside corner specifically this year. Okay.
Okay.
Reek Woolen is fourth in the stat.
That seems good.
Yeah, pretty good. If you can get it, Job is 11th.
Wow.
And okay. Devon Weatherspoon is 17th.
Okay. Right? That's good.
So they're basically all top. You have three corners who are playing in the top 20%.
Yeah, yep.
Right? So you have three corner ones, essentially. But I do think that life is a little easier for those corners when you're asking them to, you know, read and react rather than have to take a guy full field or have to sit back in zone and then wait to break on the ball until the quarterback is throwing it. Like, you're making that – you're not – playing man coverage immediately, but after about 5 yards, you're playing man coverage, right?
Sure. And
even that being the changeup helps you a lot. Plus, again, the match quarter system, really what it amounts to, guys, is you're one-on-one underneath, and then the two guys, up to two guys, I guess I should say, that run deep routes, those guys are bracketed. Those guys are getting doubled is basically what this amounts to. And then if you're only running one guy deep, hey, guess what? That other guy's floating. He's playing poach. He's zoning off and then trying to make an interception. I mean, that's really what he's trying to do. So I do think it's kind of like an easier world for those cornerbacks to live in. I know people are like, all they do is like play press man and all that. It's like, no, that is not what they're doing at all, guys. Folks, they're doing the opposite.
So do you have where are my Green Bay? Or you were going to say Hobbs. Where's Hobbs? And then where are the other Green Bay?
So I just set Hobbs as the low end because just from like a snap count standpoint,
gotcha. Right,
that's usually how I do things. I just set a fence and then I'm like, okay, I'm not counting anyone after Nate Hobbs.
That makes sense.
Hobbs from this is sorted by yards allowed per coverage snap.
Yep. Okay.
Hobbs is 56th.
Valentine, I was going to say 63rd. So I wasn't too far off. I'm going to say Valentine is 48th.
Valentine is 57th. He's right behind Hobbs. And then
I'm gonna say Nixon is 28th.
Nixon is four spots behind Valentine at 61. So they're all right there. They're all within, all three of them are within six spots of each other. So they're all right underneath like the middle 20%. Okay. So they're like, they're right on the fringe of below average to average is those three guys. I do think that there's going to be some meat on the bone in free agency, depending on how, which guys are actually allowed to hit the open market and stuff. We'll see if Green Bay has the appetite to actually go into the market. I think if they do, they'd probably have to move off of Hobbs before his bonus.
Did you hear Domofsky on that?
Did not, actually.
He was on ESPN Radio last week after Goody's press conference, and his overarching take, I don't want to put words in Rob's mouth, but his overarching take was like, why am I listening to Goody on anything when he clearly lied to us whenever he was asked about a player of who he was going to keep or not, saying we're going to keep all
our guys. He said Jair's coming back. It's hard to keep only five linebackers, all that stuff. Yeah.
Aaron Jones is the heartbeat of the team, you know, but he was saying in regards to players this year, even, but the takeaway here for me was that Rob was in kind of going on about that. He's like, in his first one, he's like, he told us Nate Hobbs is coming back. He's like, there's no way Nate Hobbs is coming back. There's no way they're paying him that roster bonus. Like, he was over the top aggressive. And I don't know if he has got inside information or if this is just Rob, you know, kind of prognosticating on this. I haven't asked him, But he was very adamant in that rant that, and I'm not saying rant in a bad way, just in general, of that Hobbs is not coming back. I thought that was a little bit interesting. I know Pete Doherty had in his column that they would release Hobbs. I actually talked to Pete after that, and right after the press conference, actually, and him and I were just kind of discussing Hobbs, and then he was kind of going back and forth a little bit more after hearing Goody as to whether or not maybe Hobbs would be back or not. But it was interesting to hear with Rob in that afterwards. He doesn't think, apparently, that there's really any chance that Hobbs would be back. We'll be right back. Hey friends, it's time to shoot your shot on Prize Picks and get $50 in lineups instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. That's right, Prize Picks is now giving you $50 in lineups when you sign up and play your first $5 lineup. Now Prize Picks makes every dunk, every dime, and every board that much more exciting. So don't miss this chance to get started on America's number one app for sports picks. And yes, Prize Picks is available here in Wisconsin. I've been picking more or less every week and have never looked back. Make sure to check if Prize Picks is available in your area today, and it probably is. They're available in 50 states. Now, Prize Picks doesn't end with football season. This week, I'm going with some basketball and hockey. Tyrese Maxey, Connor McDavid, Cade Cunningham, all three are going to be in my lineups this week. I can't wait. And guess what? Baseball season is going to be here before you know it as well. So it's time to join millions of users and sign up for America's number one sports picks app. And Prize Picks puts their users first, so all withdrawals are fast and secure. So download that Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks. It's good to be right.
I don't doubt that. There's some interesting, I think we talked about it last episode, right? There's some interesting things I think you can do with the Hobbs contract. I think you can turn it into an asset. I actually think that you can kind of trade that contract away. I will be sending you something just so that it doesn't look like I'm talking out of my ass. I sent it to you on Twitter, by the way, if you want to look at the messages. This is from one of Hobbs's agents. He has four of them. This is the one that did the contract, though. I don't really want to out the guy. But I texted him because I think it was Demoski and then Huber both had Hobbs being either released or restructured or something like that. Zach Cruz wrote it up. So I sent the Zach Cruz article. Zach Cruz does good stuff, by the way.
He's awesome. He's fantastic.
I just sent it to him on Monday, February 2nd at around 1 p.m. Pacific time. I said, what do you think of this? And his answer was, don't really care what they think. So I don't know. I don't know on the Hobbs situation. I've kind of tried to pick at it a little bit. Not getting very many answers on it. I do think, like, if there's so many weird things here, because I do believe Hobbs's camp believes that he came to Green Bay to be a nickel and that the outside stuff was lip service. Okay. And he showed up in Green Bay and it was not lip service. So what happens there, right? Because he was very much paid like a nickel. The NFL market reacted as if he was paid like a nickel. Because he was kind of the bridge in between Jordan Lewis and then there was the guy in Chicago who got paid, right? Like around the draft. I think there was a guy in Houston who got paid around the draft. Like he was the middle point between those where it went from 12 to like 13 and a half to like 14.
Was it Gordon in Chicago that got the contract?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So he was kind of viewed as the bridge between those as the NFL market. So other NFL teams considered Hobbs to be that nickel too. What do they see Hobbs as? I mean, that's kind of the big thing that they got to answer for themselves. Because if it's an outside corner, I could see them saying like, oh, he was banged up. He dealt with three different injuries this year. He was never right. We should give him another shake. And if we fall on, okay, he's actually going to be a slot defender in 26 after we have another camp with him and we have Valentine and probably one, two draft picks at the cornerback position.
You would hope.
Is that the worst thing in the world? Probably not. If they think he's a slot defender, I think you probably move off of him. But I think you could probably get value. Like if Howie Roseman, I'm going to use that as the example because he's one, the boogeyman last year was Philadelphia, right? All people could talk about was stopping a damn the tush push for Philadelphia, and oh my God, the Detroit Lions are going to run the NFC North for the next decade. They didn't make the playoffs this year.
Things change fast.
Things change fast in the NFL. Howie would probably eat the bonus and then turn him into an asset because he would be at like 60% of his contract value of an average starting NFL slot defender who's a veteran. And you could probably get a draft pick for that. So that's an option. You would have to create cap space in that scenario. Like you'd probably have to convert Jordan or Mike or whatever. And you're going to have to pay that money eventually. You don't have to pay it immediately. You can get into a world where you're kicking the can down forever. But the Packers really, in the Rodgers era, when they pushed and they were all in, they really only borrowed money for 1 year. And then it took them kind of like 2 years to kind of dig out of it. Because I don't think the Packers have any appetite for we go all in and then we go 0-16, 0-17 for 2 years, add all these draft picks, and then start rebuilding from there. I think they're going to want to be the competitive rebuild team. Like when they're rebuilding, they don't want to be they want to be in playoff contention at the same time.
I don't think they'd have to eat an exorbitant amount. So he's got
it's like $5 million, but the cap's going to be tight when you consider that like Kraft's going to get an extension. Watson is going to get an extension. Maybe the Watson number actually drops, right?
Could be.
Wyatt's number would drop if you extend him.
Yeah.
So I would need to know what the whole picture looks like, Andy. And that is part of the problem that we're dealing with is we're looking at one transaction at a time. I don't know what the overall picture is going to look like. I'm looking at this corner of the painting and I can see a foot. And so, is that a horse's foot? Is that a woman's foot? What am I looking at?
He's set to make, if a team would trade for him now, he's set to make $9.25 million this year on the 1 year deal. Or like
that's including the bonus.
That's including the roster bonus. Yes. Right. For the team that would be acquiring him. So at what, like, I would say at what, like maybe 1 year, $5 million, he starts having trade value right around there.
Probably. I don't think
if it's a seventh.
Yeah, I don't think you could trade him before the roster. I mean, maybe you can because it doesn't come with guarantees. And you can
cut. No, but you wouldn't need because you could once you do the roster bonus, can you still convert the roster bonus to you probably can't.
No, the Packers eat it. The Packers eat it.
Okay.
The Packers
eat it. But can you convert it is my question. Can you convert it to a signing bonus?
I think you probably can.
That's what I was. That's what I'm thinking, right? So even if you waited, right? So let's say you got it down to, you know, like, what did I say? 5 million. So you only have to eat about 4.25 million and you could do it on an extended, you're going to do it with void years. So only what, like you're going to do it over 5 years. So it's 800,000 a year. So you could do it for 800K coming off your books this year. True. With about 3.4 million or like 4.2 million, excuse me, coming off your books next year. And then he's at 1 year, 5 million for the team acquiring him. And he's probably worth a seventh round pick at that price at worst.
Yeah.
It'll be 800K this year.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. I'm definitely way more on the fence with him than I think like any other decision on this team. Because I think it's pretty easy to tell like who's in, who's out.
Gary's the other one that I think is in the obvious answer.
They can't, dude. They can't.
Don't tempt them. Don't tempt them.
They can't. I think Gary had like a top 20 cap hit this last year.
You know, it should be an obvious decision. Should be a clear and obvious decision. I'm not arguing that at all.
I know, dude.
I don't have any faith in anything.
I know Goot went up there and was like, well, he had some early sack production, right? And it's like, dude, Micah was running guys into him. Like that's
I actually thought of all the answers that he gave, it was the least complimentary of Gary that he actually was like, he actually gave some criticism of anybody. So and he usually doesn't even do that.
There were a couple in there. I always find like the anecdotes more. Because again, we've been saying this for years, right? Like they go up there and lie to you guys.
Yes.
Pretty consistent
job description.
they do it pretty consistently. I always think the anecdotes are more interesting. So like, I thought it was interesting. He was like, yeah, Ed Policy finally got a chance to see how we like work things out together. Cause he didn't really know what that situation was. So I'm assuming Ed Policy isn't very involved with football decisions and Green Bay folks.
That's a good thing. I would argue.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I want to put a pin in this. It remind me of the Harlan story that came out Super Bowl week.
Yeah.
And then the second thing was when they asked about him and LaFleur working together a little bit closer. And he was like, what, you guys want us to move in or something? What are you talking about? Which is, again, something that I've heard from people who have been in Green Bay before, where it's like, yeah, Goot really is working with the coaching staff a lot closer than like Ted did or anything. I believe that. Again, for the most part, I think they were lying a lot. The Bob Harlan story, Kevin Harlan went, I don't know who he was talking to. He was talking to someone at
Jim Rome, right?
It was Jim Rome, yeah. At the Super Bowl, and was basically like, yeah, dude, the Packers were going to be like financially insolvent in 1999. And that's when they had to start boosting up all the building around Lambeau and all this stuff. And that's when, that's a year removed from them going to back-to-back Super Bowls at that point. I think I looked up the record and it was something like,
well, 99 would have been after they went to back-to-back Super Bowls in 96 and 97.
Right. Yeah. 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 But I missed. So the 98 season and then
it's a couple years removed. Sorry. Yes. Right. Yes. Yep.
But yeah, just keep that in mind, folks. Like, it's not about, this league does not work in a way where you win football games, you make more money, and therefore your program is off in a better spot. That's not how this thing works at all. Again, the Cleveland Browns are the highest spending team in terms of player money over the last 6 years, and they have nothing to show for it.
Shout out to Kyle Kuzno for pointing out too that the there needs to be more recognition of Bob Harlan and what he's done for Green Bay. Big time. Going back to corners for just a moment, we talked about, you know, there could be the appetite, or there could be the possibility of maybe adding to that room and adding a player in free agency. Actually, center and corner probably make the most sense, depending on what they do with Sean Ryan, to potentially add in free agency. But
I don't think there's going to be nose tackles is the reason I don't think nose tackle is up there. Like, I'd put nose tackle as their number one need, but
I didn't love the options.
Bodies are going to hit.
Did you hear my idea?
No, we signed a Tonga. I'd sign Tonga.
That is one somebody brought up today in the members chat. I actually should have had him on the list. I don't know. I forget who brought it up in the members chat today, but especially with him working with Gannon in Arizona, what, in 2024, I didn't have him on my list and I should have. So that's on me. That's my bad. And kudos to the member who brought him up today as an option. I would contact Tennessee about Tavondre Sweat. So there was Sweat buzz at the trade deadline last year of that he could potentially be traded. Now Saleh comes in. Saleh hasn't had a tendency to have the 360-pound guys on his defensive line.
They want to one-gap shoot.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, they're guys that shoot, they're kind of half-lead. Like, they're, I mean this in no offense, but I think this tree should be dead at the NFL level at the same time. They're a dumbed-down version of what half-lead does, right? So
yeah.
Yeah.
So if they don't want him and they're willing to trade him, 2 years left on a cheap contract for a 360-pounder that's got some juice and meat and that's tough to move, I'm in. Sign me up. Find a way to get it done. It's not going to happen. We don't have to go into it too far, but I would be interested. That's for sure.
There's no bad ideas right now at nose tackle. There's no bad ideas. I'm willing to hear pretty much
keeping anything. Things status quo is the only bad idea at nose tackle at the moment.
Yes.
All right, so let's talk corners, though. You said you did some research and had some corners in mind in free agency that might fit. I did an episode recently, so let's compare notes. Who goes to the top of your list?
So I basically just sorted by that stat that I was talking about, right?
Okay.
But I did shave off some people, okay? So you fall behind that trio in this stat. Right? Yards allowed per coverage snap. I don't want you. You're in the bottom 40% of.
Yeah, you can't be worse than what they have now. I'm with you on that.
Okay. So we have that. We have I don't think that they're going to be in the market for anyone under or anyone over 27 years old. I just don't think that that's how they treat free agency. Goot even said,
not how they usually do.
Speaking out of both sides of my mouth right now, because I'm like, Goot lies to you in the press conferences. But now I'm going to say, like, I do think Goot is telling the truth when he's like, it's not that we have a thing against age. It's just we really are only interested in signing players on multi-year deals. So you have to be a long-term answer. Again, cornerback is a very volatile position.
I have three names that I think might be on your list. And I will, how many are on your list?
Eight.
Okay, well, I have probably four then that'll be on your list that I feel pretty confident will be on there. But hit me. Who you got first? Who's first on your list?
So the first in this stat, folks, you're going to remember his name. He finished second in yards allowed per coverage snap this past season, only behind Diamador Lenore. It's Eric Stokes. Remember that guy?
I do.
He did really well for the Raiders this year.
He did great. I hate it. I hate that he did great. I'm happy for him. But yeah, he was fantastic for them on a bad team too.
Yep. Crazy.
I don't think they would do it. I don't think they would do the Stokes reunion. Maybe I'm wrong, but it felt like things fell to the point where Green Bay needed a change of scenery. Eric Stokes needed a change of scenery, but you never know in this league. This league's weird.
So was 21 the first barrier? It was.
Sounds ish, right?
I think this so bad. Stokes is drafted to play in the quarter system, and then we got away with it after his rookie season. And he was really good his rookie season.
He was very good his rookie season.
He did the rest of his career.
Okay.
This is what I'm saying when, like, you flip-flop defensive coordinators from, like, different trees and stuff. Like, you kind of got to pick one and just ride with it. This is a slow-moving boat, man. This slow-turning boat. You can't be flipping DCs all the time. The next two guys, we already talked about Woolen and Job.
Okay.
Some guy
is named Job a free agent? Job must be a free agent, huh?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Job is a free agent. The next guy I'm not super familiar with, his name is Monteric Brown.
Monteric Brown?
Monteric Brown from Jacksonville.
That's my guy. That's my guy.
Sweet. I mean, he checks all the boxes. It seems like he was a full-time starter this year and was kind of like a part-time starter last year for Jacksonville. Yep. After
continue
that,
he didn't improve his entire time in Jacksonville. 68 attempts towards him per PFF, 37 completions, only 383 yards allowed, 3 touchdowns, 2 picks, 9 pass breakups, only 3 penalties, which is good, 73.3 quarterback rating when targeted.
So all those guys are in like the top 20 percentile of cornerbacks.
I think they're going to be interested in Brown. I think that's their type of off of his rookie deal, up and coming, played his best in his final year, position of need, premium position. Like that is a
frame that they look after. All that
frame
stuff.
That is a Goody type through and through.
There's only one guy in the next 20% of this bell curve. It's Jalen Watson from Kansas City.
Yep, had him on my list.
I'm sure people are aware of who he is. He's been playing and starting for a team that is perpetually on primetime television consistently. The next
Monteric Brown might be out.
What'd he do?
4.23 relative athletic score with a 1.48 short shuttle score and a 1.66 three cone score. Bad agility, bad vert.
Yeah. We've taken some guys with some bad agility numbers.
Well, they do change things when they sign people. It's more of like they use it as an eliminator when they're looking to draft people. And then once they see that they're good in the NFL, they don't care anymore. Like, oh, you're a good player in the NFL. It doesn't matter what your scores were anymore.
Yeah, Banks is not a Packers type offensive lineman from an athletic standpoint, but like Belton is, Jordan Morgan is, all that stuff. The next guys are kind of like cautious tales. The final three ones on my list, we have Jalen Armour Davis from Tennessee. He tore his Achilles tendon in week 17. Cam Taylor Britt, who if we believe some of these rumors, right, the Packers were listening to trade or listening interested in Cam Taylor Britt around the deadline. He ended up having to have a Liz Frank surgery like right after the deadline. So that's not a great situation. And then the final guy on this list, Trayvon Diggs. You ever heard of him? He made the cut too. So yeah, I think so. If we're going non-Packers guys who haven't been in Green Bay before, if we're not counting Diggs or not counting Stokes, we're not going the injury route, then I think we're down to four corners. We're down to Woolen, Jobe, Manetric Brown, and then Jalen Watson. I mean, that's kind of what it boils down to.
What was your snap cutoff? How many snaps did they have to play?
Oh goodness. Here I can look. It was 148 in coverage at outside corner.
Okay. Can how hard is it for you to look up 2024?
I can probably do it.
I'm curious where Joshua Williams ranks.
Joshua Williams. I can do it.
I have faith in you.
Cut some of this.
The grind is the beauty. This is where the big money is made. Yep.
Well, I just looked at him for passing stats, so I'm a moron. I'll get 24. Coverage. Very good.
Very good.
Very good.
Keep an eye on him too. He was out all last year in 2025. He only played 17 snaps, was out with injury. He's been good in his career. He's 6'3", 193, was a fourth round pick by KC. He's coming off his rookie contract as well. If KC prioritizes a corner, they probably are prioritizing Jalen Watson. And I could see Joshua Williams ending up elsewhere. And he's been pretty darn good when targeted and with everything. It's just, can he stay healthy? So what Green Bay probably needs most is an off-injured corner. That's what they could really use. But no, he's been good when healthy. And if he could stay healthy this year, they might get him at a little bit more of a value just because he is coming off a fully injured year.
This guy from Purview?
He is. Fayetteville State.
Fayetteville State. Goodness gracious. Yeah. He would have finished like eighth in the NFL in 2025 with his 2024 numbers.
Yeah. He didn't play a ton. He only played 411 total snaps, 282 in coverage. So it was a slightly scaled back sample size, but he'd be another one. Monterrick Brown and if Jalen Watson could get in the conversation, sure. But Joshua Williams would be kind of my more, you know, interesting one. Those would be the three that I think make some real sense for Green Bay. But Brown is really intriguing to me. And I think, like I said earlier, he kind of checks the boxes for what they look at in free agency.
Yeah. And that's really what I'm just trying to do. I'm just trying to make watch lists, right? So like Woolen, Jobe, like, yeah, guys, the guys in the crazy secondary that just won the Super Bowl, I'm sure they're going to have interest, but I wouldn't have known about Monterrick Brown unless I started looking into numbers and stuff. Jalen Watson, again, another one that I think would have been pretty obvious. He's going to be in a lot of these top 50s that you guys see and stuff.
Yeah, no, we had a very similar list for the most part. I threw other names out there that were a little bit older to Jamel Dean, if they were willing to take a shot.
Yeah, he had good numbers. I had him as an age guy, like the older guys.
Yeah.
Were like Darius Slay, Trey White, Rasul, Chidobe Awuzie, Jamel Dean, Rocky Sin, Benjamin St. Juice. I think James Pierre, Jack Jones, and Kobe Durant are all guys who are both on the older scale and the smaller scale for Green Bay. So I think that's like double knock as far as they see it.
St. Juice is an interesting one if they wanted somebody a little bit cheaper to me too. 6'3", 220. He turns 29 in September, so he's 28 technically right now. He's coming off his best season, although again, it was a very limited sample size.
Yeah. It's just so hard with these cornerbacks, man. Like I don't know why we get hyper fixated on the running backs, like the running backs die at 30 years old in the NFL. Buddy, everyone is like, there's very few positions outside of like the offensive line and quarterback where you want guys on the other side of 30 years old. And
kicker's the only one. Maybe long snapper, maybe punter.
Go find me a list of all the old cornerbacks in the league who are not just like the longest dudes in the world and are not just being asked to like jam guys in cover two. If you want guys to run with receivers in this league, there's not many 30-year-olds who are doing it, folks.
Look how quickly Jair aged. I mean, and there's other things that went on there too, but like it happens like that, and then it's gone.
It
happens very quick.
If you lose a step at corner, like remember when Pat Pete was dealing with the undiagnosed diabetes stuff?
He
had like elite stretch, a year where he looked like the worst football player in the NFL, and then another elite stretch on the back end once he got his diabetes stuff figured out. Like, if you lose a step at cornerback,
it's over.
It's almost impossible to make that up. It's almost impossible.
Which is why I thought Rasul was going to be toast after Buffalo, because he lost a hard step in Buffalo, and then he sort of had his second revitalization of his career in Miami. I would still buyer beware the hell out of that thing.
Yes.
Because
once the corners get that old, dog, I'm not – look, have fun signing older free agent cornerbacks. It won't be me. It will not
be me. I'll take the L on last year. I said stay the heck away, and then he had a really nice year in Miami. I'm too scarred from that Buffalo tape. I will be with you on the other side and say, you know what? If he proves me wrong again, I'll take the L again, rather than saying, yep, go get him. And then it looks like it did in Buffalo again. Yep. All right, some others. There's the little bit of buzz. Romeo Doubs could still stay in Green Bay. I call BS on it. I'd be curious your thoughts, though.
I don't think so. Not after we drafted Matthew Golden.
They tell you what they're going to do before they do it. They tell you what they're going to do. They told us via draft, we're going to move on from Romeo Doubs. I put it at under 5%, or right around 5% maybe, but could they do it? Sure. It seems like a very bad use of resources. Unless you're going to turn around and trade Jaden Reed or something, it doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, and then play Matthew Golden in the slot?
Yeah.
For the next forever in perpetuity, because Watson's going to get an extension too?
So, I guess Watson could play in the slot too. Wicks can play a little in the slot this year.
Third downs. Yeah. I mean, I think if you gun to their head, like you ask LaFleur if he wants to have Watson outside or Matthew Golden outside, he's going to pick Watson every single time.
Correct. Rightfully so.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think it would be really tough. I know Fowler had that and he wrote it up.
We also saw Romeo do a uncharacteristic like Radio Row and they're in free agent mode.
I saw that and I was like, yes, agents doing a great job.
And I think the agent's probably the one that's saying, yeah, Green Bay is really interested in bringing him back. Drum up that interest. You're going to have to pay a pretty penny. I don't buy it. I don't think I will be very, very surprised if he's back in Green Bay.
So it came out Pickens is going to get tagged, right?
And then I didn't see that. Is that true?
Schefter reported it. Yeah.
Okay. I was busy with, was it today?
No, I think it was like two nights ago, but it was crazy time, West Coast time. So you probably didn't see it. And then if Alec Pierce gets a deal done, I don't know how many receivers are above the line of Romeo Doubs at that point, right? Like those are kind of the big ones.
The two. Unless Mike Evans is out there. That's an interesting situation.
Yeah. I guess it's technically the same position, but there's such different markets. Like
completely. Yes.
Yeah.
And there's not either way. There's not many. If there are, there's not many above Romeo.
Yeah. So we'll see. I still think, well, actually I don't know that for a fact, but like last off season, I think the market would have been like the Khalil Shakir deal.
And now that's the one I've been pointing to too. It just makes all the sense in the world. Something very similar.
Like if he's,
he's the guy.
It only takes two people to start a bidding war. Everyone else can hold the line and say, hey, we think you're a $13 million per year receiver. And then two guys are like, well, we'll be willing to go up to 20. Then he's getting paid 20. He's not getting paid the average of what everyone thinks he should get paid. He's getting paid what the most he can get on the market is.
And I'd be willing to bet you, I bet Green Bay's offer would come below the Shakir contract and be like, yeah, we'll bring you back for $10 million a year. And he's like, I can get like
Green 18. Green Bay doesn't even do that. Like Green Bay just doesn't offer guys.
That could be too.
Many times do we have to, like, all the guys who leave Green Bay are always pissed that they never even get an offer from Green Bay, right? So if they know that they're going to come, if they can't at least give him the Shakir deal, they're just not going to give him an offer.
It is funny because, like, what would you rather have as a player? Would you rather have the, I'm not going to offer you a deal, or would you rather have the, you know, you're worth 18 mil on the open market and Green Bay calls and says, like, we'll give you six. Like what's more of a slap in the face? Probably the six, right? So
I think that's why Green Bay doesn't offer.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
I think that's their logic of like, hey man, don't come back. Like we're not going to pay you what you want. You're not going to take what we want. Let's just move on.
We'll be right back. All right. I wanted to ask you about this one. It's not specifically Packers related, but I think it's a fun convo. The Schefter report today that there's somebody that's going to propose that trading draft picks goes from 3 years out to 5 years out.
So is it Cincinnati or is it Minnesota, right? I feel like we're all seeing the same thing here. Or maybe the Raiders, I guess?
Somebody wants to be able to trade picks a little bit further out, have a little bit more flexibility. That's for damn sure.
I wrote it up at APC. This is so stupid. This whole league is based off of parity. It's why they do the national TV rights, all that stuff. It's why they make a ton of money. They can, like, hope farm at the NFL draft, all this stuff. And now you want to strip a team of draft picks 5 years down the line. And the problem is the teams that are going to be making those trades are going to be general managers who are on the hot seat. It's going to be teams like
the dumbest teams. It's going to be the dumbest teams.
Like, look, just look at what happened this past weekend for Atlanta, right? Fontenot was a general manager for 4 years, never had a winning record, got the fifth year under blank, traded a future first, dropped 55 draft slots in day two so that they could go up and get James Pierce as a Hail Mary of, like, we got to fix the pass rush. If we don't fix the pass rush, we're not going to be here next year. James Pierce had red flag. You talk to anyone in the draft world, they knew about the red flags about James Pierce, which, to be fair, from what I had heard, none of it involved any sort of, like, domestic situation or anything like that. It was just like, this dude is terrible to be around. People hate working around him. Tennessee was not mad that he left and went pro early, all this stuff.
Had a pretty good season overall.
Had a good season. And now, like, he's got, what, 5 felony charges? And, like,
is that bad?
For real, might go to prison.
Might legitimately.
For real, should, might go to prison.
I don't want to be a jury or judge when I don't have any evidence in front of me. But if what is said to have happened is true, should definitely
go to prison. If what is said has happened is true, buddy, they have it on film, right? So, like, if the story is he tried to pull his WNBA player girlfriend out of a car at an intersection, you would think intersection has cameras, right?
You would think.
He backed up into her. She drove to the police station. Then he hit her car on the front end. And
they tried to flee the scene too.
Yeah. Like, got into a fight outside of the police station with, like, a bunch of officers. Like, that, all of that is going to be on film,
camera,
right? Yeah. So, like, I'm not worried about evidence collection.
Doesn't look great.
Yeah. But no, it's going to be teams like that. Like Minnesota is a team that is desperate enough to do this. When we're talking about these things where it's like the NFC is so tough right now and all this stuff. And
you better get a quarterback.
You better, in the NFC North, you better find one, because Dan Campbell is not going anywhere, right? Ben Johnson isn't going anywhere. The Packers are in year, like, 30 plus of this program at this point. Like, they're not going anywhere. Like, if you don't want to finish in last place again, you got to probably shake some things up. And, like, is Ryan Grigson going to be the guy who's pulling strings and making you trade all these draft picks for Joe Burrow so that he can get the GM job? Like, good grief. Should we let guys do this? It never makes sense to me, Andy, that you could trade a draft pick that is further into the future than your contract as a general manager. If you're on a
if you're a good deal, owner, you shouldn't allow deal. It to happen. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And all these rules are really made to, like, make it easy for the owners. So the owners who have no idea how to run a football program can still just bank on, like, okay, at least we should be, like, 500 average, you know, in perpetuity. And this works against that, which I guess helps a franchise like the Green Bay Packers, because I don't think that we're ever going to be doing something like this.
It's funny to me now in the NBA, because in the NBA, you can trade 7 years in advance. Now, you can't trade back-to-back years and things like that. They've got rules for it. But it is funny now that I have a 12-year-old to think, like, when teams are trading their 2032 first-round picks, like, well, clearly that's, like, my son's draft pick just got traded in 2025, seven years away.
And it's like, what are we doing, dude? What the hell are we doing?
He's a sixth grader. There's probably fifth graders that are going to be in that 2032 NBA draft. So, Yeah, it's crazy. Here's where I want to get your real thoughts on it. If they change this and you could go to 5 years instead of 3 years, we know that it's the dumb teams that are going to do it, but smart teams are going to take advantage of it.
Yes.
Do you feel like this would be something that would be advantageous or disadvantageous to Green Bay if the rule went through? And I think, before you even answer, I'm going to lead you because this is what a bad interviewer does. On the surface, it would seem like this would be a very good thing for Green Bay. They're not going to be the team that trades away future picks and makes a huge mistake and does something like this. But I do wonder if they're ever the team that goes so aggressively to trade off players to get 3 first round picks in the future or something like that. And I also wonder if we do get to a point where other teams, when they feel like they are, a player away or something, do start saying, yeah, we're going to give away, 3, 4 first round picks to get the player two away that they need to make that run. And Green Bay never does. And they ultimately, they're always the bridesmaid, never the bride. And they're always just a couple, there's always going to be the team that's going to do it, right? Kind of like we see now from time to time, but there's always going to be the team that says F them picks, we're going all in. And if you have to go against 2 or 3 of those teams every single year that are saying we're all in on doing this, and they're never the team that's getting the picks in exchange, they could be in a weird no man's land. I think it's going to benefit, but I'd be curious your thoughts.
Yeah, I still think overarchingly it's going to benefit, because what it's going to do is it's going to hurt teams who have no impulse control. And if there's anything that's true about the Packers, we are the kings of impulse control. Right, to the point that it drives fans crazy. I do think that there's really only 2 use cases, I think, and maybe I'm wrong, of how you could do that, why this would even be a factor. I think it would matter for trading for quarterbacks, right? Correct. So if you want a Joe Burrow or something like that.
Burrow's the first name that came to mind, especially when we're talking about a team like Minnesota. Yep.
And then I think it helps you trade away quarterbacks.
Correct.
Too, right? Where if you're like, hey, man, dude, obviously we want to move off of Tua. Obviously we want to move off of Kyler. Does this make it more palatable for us if we can package it with a future first round pick and do all these cash swap things and stuff? But
to use an NBA example, there's probably a world in which Giannis would have been traded to a Golden State or a Miami or one of these teams if they had 2 or 3 more first round picks. If they could have gone a few more years into the future and then use those picks, they probably would have done it. And Milwaukee then probably gets to say yes. But because Miami was limited to basically 2 first round picks, and Golden State was basically limited to 3.5 first round picks, basically, there was a limit to what they could ultimately do. Yeah. If they could have gotten more future first round picks, there's a point where I think they both say yes. So yeah, I think there probably is a world where if you're a team with a Giannis in the NFL world, and instead of just getting 3 first round picks, which is the most any team can offer now, all of a sudden, if some team is offering 5, first round picks for Joe Burrow, all right, well, that's a horse of a different color than just the most you can get is 3.
Yeah.
Whether it should or not, I don't know, that's another question, but it changes the calculus.
Like, if you're the Vikings, if you're Wilf, right? Do you want the interim general manager trading away your draft pick for, 26, 27, 28, 29, 20, 30? In 2030, do you want the interim general manager trading away the first round pick so he could grab Joe Burrow?
I hope so.
And get the full-time job? Right, but
it would be a pain in the ass right now, I'll tell you that much. Add Joe Burrow to this division? Oh, my God. I don't even want to think about it.
Like, it can't be that dumb. And maybe some of them are. Because ultimately, this is going to come down to, the owners' meetings. This isn't going to be, the competition committee or anything like that. It's not going to be the players and general managers or the coaches and general managers deciding on this. It's going to be ownership. Just seems dumb. Also, are we just done with parity in the NFL? Like, we do not have a functioning salary cap, and we could trade away first-round picks from 5 years down the line? Or we just done pretending that the salary cap is for anything other than wage suppression? We're just done with parity?
Potentially. Although you could maybe argue if the teams at the bottom are now more desperate to not be teams at the bottom, or the teams at the bottom that are the ones that are trading, a billion future first round picks to get up. And now, I don't know. At the end of the day, you're right. It's going to end up with more bad teams. It's going to enhance the polls of like, you've got, I think, more really good teams and you've got more.
You're going into the year and you're like, we are not competing this season. And
look at the Rams. The Rams, if the Falcons, man, from a Packers standpoint, we are very, and from the rest of the NFC standpoint, we are very, very lucky that the Falcons went on a win streak to end the season, because that thing was trending towards maybe being a top seven-ish pick for the Rams. And now the Rams, who, again, were probably the second best team in the NFL. Again, I think that was the semifinals against the Seahawks, and were this close to probably being Super Bowl champions. They were this close to going into, you know, having a top eight, top seven, top six pick in this draft. If the Falcons just lose whatever in a row, three in a row at the end, instead they won three or four in a row at the end and got that to, I think, like pick 14 or 15. But still, now the Rams have two first round picks this year, which is not ideal for the rest of the NFC. And the Falcons get worse. The Rams, the top team, get better. The Falcons, not a top team, get worse.
And one of the crazy things, like, the Rams aren't even spending money right now, man. The Rams are like the second lowest cash spend team on players over the last, since the pandemic.
They're in a small market in LA. They got to be careful. Yeah, I
mean, and there's no money in LA for sure. They get a Super Bowl next year, right? I think so.
I can't remember. All right. Couple things before I get you out of here. First of all, want to pass on my condolences to Oliver. Friend of the show.
I think I showed him on screen once, right?
I think at least once. Yeah, for sure. So my condolences on that. That sucks, and I hate that for you guys. I'm sorry, man.
Oh no, he lived to be. He turned 18, I think.
Okay.
In October. So
I'm not familiar with my cat years of how what a lifespan
is. He's geezed up for sure. No, he lived a good life. Don't worry about him. We got him out before his like cheek cancer thing really started to bother him. So
glad to hear that. Glad to hear that.
Didn't want him to wither away.
The other thing is, we've got a shout out, assuming this is all legit. Yes. Bears Mysterio, who for those who are unaware, you know, you came on this show. And that's correct, right? You came on this show and called. Yes. Or what was the note?
It was going into the Bears game. It was going into the Bears playoff game.
Yes, I didn't. All of a sudden, I'm like, oh my god, am I making this about Pack a Day and us when it was something that you did on your own? But you know, you said that you would put the mask on the line, you know, against Bears Mysterio. It was a mask versus mask sort of situation, and of course, the Packers lost. So you lost your mask to Bears Mysterio, which the bet was he was going to burn it in a fiery inferno. And he had the teaser a couple weeks back of having the flames out and ready to go, and said, wait for the final conclusion. And then I'll let you tell the rest of the story.
Yeah. He posted a video today and he had the lighter and he had the mask. And then he was like, psych, nah, we're souping up the mask. So it's got a bunch of like Green Bay patches on it. He said, I got a ponytail now, all sorts of stuff.
Pretty great.
And he said he's sending the mask back. So the mask is coming back. I'll definitely, it'll make its debut here on Pack a Day.
That is one of the cooler things. Certainly the coolest thing I think a Bears fan has, I've ever seen do. But that's pretty badass, you know, and total props to him. That is a really cool gesture. And that is like my side of football of like, I love that sort of stuff where it's like, you had a bet, you went all in, you went over aggressive, which I love to death. And then, you know, you followed up on it and said, yep, here you go, burn it away. You deserve it. I bet it fair and square. And he has every right to burn it. I fully expected it to get burned. And then he's like,
I thought it was getting burned, by the way. I had no idea that this was coming up.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. I thought it was a billy, but I didn't know how like sacrificial. I didn't know if this was going to get sacrificed to the football gods to help them in future draft positions. I didn't know what was going to happen. But to do that is a very, very cool move. And shout out Bears Mysterio. That's pretty freaking awesome.
Yeah, solid dude. Two dudes committing to the bit, and then it all ending in, you know, having a happy ending. So.
All right, now I got to know, had his mask got sent to you, what was the plan for his mask? If he said,
I was honest, I was going to put it up on the wall.
Okay.
That's, I was going to have it be a pelt. But now I feel bad that I was going to have it be a pelt because he was a nice guy.
That's true. That is true. But either way, that is that's amazing. And kudos to him and shout out to him. Good karma for him. And the Bears fans and fan base still has a lot of work to do to gain karma back in totality. But that was a good step for them. Kudos to him.
It's going to be a long time, man. I think we're going to be going head to head.
He just tweeted right as we said this. Oh no, maybe it's just notifications for him. Oh, he just he's just responding back to people that have shouted him out, which is very cool. So, all right, final thoughts before we get out of here.
We didn't get to the draft corners this week.
Well, yeah, that's my bad. I could just say like, oh, we ran out of time, but I didn't do my homework assignment. So we did free agent corners instead this week. We'll try to get to draft corners next week.
Yeah, we got plenty of time between now and April. I'm in no hurry. I just wanted to
Now and all of a sudden it's like April 14th, and I'm like, God, what just happened?
I know. That's why I wanted to get the corners out of the way, because I was like, I feel smart, like we're gonna watch the corners, and I think I'm done watching the corners outside. Like, there's like three edge cases. I think I might.
Do you know the first player we discussed last year?
Savion
Williams. And they drafted him. So whatever one
it's
we end
very
up
very obvious what type of wide receivers the Packers like. It's to just be, guys, we're very specific on not every position, but a lot of positions. Like corners, we do not want small guys. It's not that we want big guys. We don't want small guys. Offensive line, right now, outside of center, we want big guys. Running backs. Folks, if you've looked the last, like, 2 years, like, really everyone LaFleur has had since the A.J. Dillon draft outside of Aaron Jones, folks, we want, like, 220-pounders. Wide receivers, we want guys who are, like, 205 or bigger, unless you're going to be a slot-only guy. This team is not that hard to figure out, and we've had, like, again, 30-plus years of data to figure out, like, what does this team think of football as, like, a worldview, right? Yes. It's not hard to figure out.
Very true. They'll change things up on you every once in a great while. Offensive line was a little bit unique this past year, what they did, but it's like you said, the slow shit. Well, just get a little bit bigger. Just a little bit bigger.
I think that's really been since like 22. Since like 2022, yeah. I think they've wanted to get bigger on the offensive line. I don't think that they've had the opportunities. If you want the shorthand for the offensive lineman, it's not a hard line, but it's in the ballpark of like a shuttle in the like 4.75 range, a cone in like the 7.75 range. And what the Packers used to do is they used to capture all these guys who would hit those numbers and were undersized, right? But sometime around 2022, the Packers realized they want to be an inside run team. They want to run inside zone. They want to run duo. All they want to do is mash with that offensive line. And ever since then, they've still been in that market for that level of athleticism, but they want the size behind it too, which then makes the board even smaller for offensive linemen for the most part. I think centers is a completely different story. We can look at Monk. We can look at guys like that who have been drafted. I don't think that, like, if they go into the draft this year, I don't think that we're only looking at, like, 320-pound centers, but I do think like the other positions they'll probably want them to be like that. That you might have some edge cases like a Brian Parker from Duke, who's a guy who can play center and play other spots too. But I do think that like ultimately like their guards and tackles, they do want those guys to be like super huge. They want them to be massive.
Okay, I have one more thing to add to our conversation before we shut this down. It's now come to my attention that our guy from earlier, Monteric Brown. His nickname is Buster. It's Buster Brown. I'm all in. I'm all in on Buster Brown being added to the Packers secondary.
He is not from the West Coast. If you get called Buster on the West Coast,
that's Busta.
Yeah, that is not a. It's not a great term to be called. So yeah, where's he from? He's from the South, I assume.
He played college at Arkansas. He went to high school at Ashton. He is from Arkansas, Ashton, Arkansas, one of the two.
Yeah, I feel like a Buster has to come from somewhere SEC country.
Monteric Buster Brown, Arkansas country.
Sure. Didn't we have a Buster last year? Wasn't the long corner from FAU, wasn't he Buster or something like that?
I got nothing. It's not ringing a bell. Who's the long corner from FAU?
He was the guy who, like, he was like 6'4". He was like a UDFA cornerback.
He was on the team in 2024?
Five, I think. I think he was an undrafted guy. This is great radio. Remember some guy? We don't have his name. I know he's tall.
There was Gregory Jr. There was a junior Gregory Jr.
Yeah, there was Gregory Jr. No, that wasn't the guy. We're doing this. Computer off.
There's Buster Screen, but he was never a Packer.
Bugs.
Oh,
yeah. You're Bugs Brown. It was Bugs Brown. Not Buster. There we go.
Yeah. Easy to confuse. All right, my friend, let's get you out of here. Appreciate everything. AcmePackingCompany.com. What you got cooking?
Man, we're just going to keep hitting. I think I'm going to do some like actual free agency preview stuff just for my own eyes that I then get to share that information with you guys. I really want to know, like we just walked through with the cornerbacks, right? I also want to know like what nose tackles are going to be actually available on the market.
It's not great.
I assume it's not great. I'm going in assuming I'm probably going to want to come out and be like Tonga or bust, basically. And then I want to do the same thing at the center position too. So
here are the top defensive tackles, either via cut candidates or free agent. I'm not going to say names because I know you want to go into it blind. I'm just going to tell you the ages of the people that could potentially make sense. 32, 40, 32, 29, 31, 31, 33, 29. That one I didn't put. 32, 32, 31.
It's not looking great, fellas. I'm going to be honest. It's not looking great. How old is Tonga? Because Tonga was a BYU kid, so he might
Tonga, have been. Again, I didn't have him on my list. That was my bad. So,
because he might have been.
He turns 30 in July.
Wow. So I did the draft. Wow. He was 20.
He might have been overage coming out. He was a BYU kid.
That's what I said. Yeah, that's why I was like, he was a BYU kid coming out of a pandemic season.
He was 75 when he's the exact opposite of Kenny Clark. He was 75 when he got drafted.
Yeah, so it wouldn't surprise me if he was on the older age. So yeah, that's not a shock. Because Tonga was 21. Because that was after, because I'd worked with the XFL and then I started doing some 21 draft stuff that year, and he was that class. Because I had Tonga as like a fourth round grade or something, and I was like, who's not seeing this? And then he ended up going like undrafted or like seventh round, and then bouncing around for a bit. But he's solid now. Only took him until year 30. So
250th pick overall in that draft. Yeah, so it is a
basically
barren wasteland for any sort of young. And that's even like cut candidates I went through. Like
people look at like defensive tackle lists and they're like, oh, Josh Franklin Myers. And I'm like, dude, he is like 280 pounds.
He's not what they want.
He's not.
And also going to be 29 years old. Yeah. The other thing too is like, if you're looking for a 25, 26 year old defensive tackle. Good luck.
I know. And that's the tough thing with the Green Bay spot last year, right? Because people were like, why can't you just find like a Kenny Clark replacement? I'm like, the people way overdrafted defensive tackles last year because no one hit the market in 25 and free agency. And then you trade Kenny Clark and
guys like Grady Jarrett and those type of defensive tackles were going for insane money. Like some like bad defensive tackle. Javon Kinlaw, who did not have a great career up until that point, went
lots of money. Crazy money. Niners fans talk about that pick the same way we talk about like Kevin King and stuff.
And
he got paid. Like, I think he might have gotten like $45 million guaranteed or something like that.
Even Slayton got over $7 million per year. Yeah. And, you know, so it was.
He was a part-time guy.
That's why, again, Tavondre Sweat, I don't know what he goes for on a trade market. But, like, if you're looking for a 25-year-old, 360-pound nose tackle that can stuff the run and move a little bit, that's my answer. That's never going to happen. All right. Go follow him at JUMOSQ on social media, acmepackingcompany.com. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. Justice and I will be back chatting next week. In the meantime, of course, we got you covered 365 right here on the Pack a Day podcast. And of course, again, Justice over at Acme Packing Company. We'll see you guys soon. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.